it's time for a reclamation. And I think that the amount of healing and rebalancing and magic that will happen as a result is really exciting and, dare I say, necessary for us to actually solve the challenges that we are facing as a species, because we are not going to do it at the same state of consciousness or the same state of receiving from which we have created it.
Hey guys, it's Kathy Heller. Welcome back to the Kathy Heller podcast. I'm thrilled because my good friend Emily Fletcher is on the show today, and she's such a magnificent human being and has so much wisdom. I think you're going to probably want to take notes. So whether you're driving, you might want to come back to this episode, but there's a lot of good stuff here. Before we dive into that, I wanted to let you know we're doing this pop-up workshop. It's going to be March 20th at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 Eastern. And it's all about what are the 5 best podcasting secrets that I have for you that will help you to make an amazing show, have this incredible audience. Like, what are the 5 best podcasting secrets so that you can develop your podcasting concept? You can figure out how to start a show without knowing a ton about tech. You can create captivating content. You can get your podcast out there to people who really need to hear it. And lots more. If you want to come to the workshop, you can register at kathyheller.com/workshop, and we'd love to see you there. So today, Emily Fletcher is here. She's the founder of Ziva Meditation, creator of the Ziva Technique. She's a leading expert in meditation for high performance. Plus, she's an author and she's a podcaster. Emily has created an incredible movement, and she's taught her Ziva Technique to over 50,000 people. She wrote a beautiful book called Stress Less, Accomplish More, Meditation for Extraordinary Performance. And if you haven't listened to her podcast, it's called Why Isn't Everyone Doing This? Then do yourself a favor and go follow it or subscribe wherever you're listening. She recently launched season 2 of her podcast, and she has so many good discussions coming out. On her show, she explores some of the juiciest modalities that can give you the kind of bliss and pleasure that's really your birthright. She has really interesting conversations with scientists, doctors, healers, and innovative thinkers. I had the honor of being on her podcast, and it was hands down one of the best interviews I've ever done. I've never gotten such a powerful response from doing anyone else's podcast, and I really have to hand it to Emily. She's an exceptional interviewer. She and I actually go back a few decades. We went to college together, and it's really been fun to watch her journey. And you're going to hear a little bit about all of that in the episode too. She has a gorgeous heart, and her energy could just light up a city. She's really doing powerful work in the world, helping people to arrive at their own door and helping us understand the power that lives within us. I can't wait for you to hear everything she has to share. So let's get into it. Without further ado, please welcome the brilliant Emily Fletcher.
Hi. Hi, sweet Kathy. I'm so happy to see you. I'm so excited to be here. This is my jam.
Oh, it's so your jam. And it's really amazing how when you look back at your path, you can see how the gifts that you cultivated in knowing how to hold space for people, of course, like the ultimate mic drop of that gift would be to serve people in the way where you lead them to their own strength and power within them. But little did you know, at 9 years old, you were like, I can sing and dance. So clearly I'm just supposed to do this in front of other humans. But really you showed them the talent and magic that's just inside their own breath. Mm-hmm. So I want to start there with what was the sort of river bend that led you sort of out of one really fulfilling, amazing, electrifying path called all things performance and the Olympics of performance, which was Broadway, which was your world. What led you from that into this world of meditation and mindfulness and manifestation?
Yeah. So I really believed since I was a little girl that once I got on Broadway, I was going to be happy. Like with every cell of my being.
Yes.
I was so deeply ingrained in the I'll be happy when syndrome that like once I get on Broadway, I won't have any more problems. I won't have any more money issues.
Right.
I won't ever have love issues. That'll be like martinis at Sardi's with Liza Minnelli.
And instead it was 3 weeks after my Broadway debut was the saddest I had ever been.
And so at 22 years old, I had the amazing gift of achieving my lifelong dream. And the gift was not the achievement of the dream. the gift was actually realizing at such a young age that I was more interested in the happiness of pursuit than I was the pursuit of happiness. Like, I loved going towards the goal. I loved auditioning. I loved going to dance class. I loved voice lessons. And I'm not even mad at the I'll be happy when syndrome.
Right.
Because it was the belief that that achievement would make me happy is what made the pursuit so fulfilling.
I've never heard those words put together, and I'm surprised that no one else has ever said it so well, because it's so obvious. But that I have, feels like only recently, but I feel like we all learn the same lessons over and over. But I feel like recently I learned it again, that when you grow up in any kind of fight or flight situation pattern, which to some extent, especially if we haven't been meditating or growing up in a blue zone, probably there's some level of cortisol pulsing through your vein. Yeah. There is this level of familiarity in like a constant crisis or like a constant feeling of needing to assert and to be depleted. And it's almost like you don't have the vessel yet or the muscle to say like, oh, what would it feel like in the having of this moment, in the receiving of this moment? So I am fully in awe, because I happen to, of all the 8 billion people on the planet, I happen to have seen you as you were in this crescendo. Like in college, we went to Florida State, which happens to have this incredible BFA fine arts program. And you were, it was so obvious. It was so obvious that whatever door you wanted to open, it was opening, because you were magnetic and you still are. And I'm in awe that that has not continued to confuse you, because it's so alluring and you were so damn good at it that it's pretty amazing that the healthiness raised its hand and said, there's something else here. So tell us a little bit about that whole discovery process.
Yeah. So thank you for naming that, because the beautiful thing is that I actually fell more deeply in love with meditation than I did performing. And I don't know if it was just a chapter change or a phase change, but I finally found the thing that I was looking for. Like the thing that I thought that Broadway was going to give me, meditation actually gave me. It actually gave me access to that fulfillment in the only place that it resides, which is inside of us, and the only time that it resides, which is right effing now. And so while I found happiness in the pursuit of happiness, right, like going towards Broadway, meditation actually gave it to me by flooding my brain and body with dopamine and serotonin, by changing my neurochemistry inside. And so I was like, oh, I found the key. Like I found the key, the thing that we're all looking for. It's right inside of us. And then I am the kind of person, when I find something that works, I cannot help but shout it from the rooftops.
Yeah,
I was like, burr, 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 burr. And I was like, hey, why isn't everyone doing this? So I left Broadway. I went to India. I trained for 3 years to be a teacher. And my training was very intense. It was studying the Vedas. It was transcribing books by hand in Sanskrit. It was apprenticing. It was ushering thousands of people through this meditation training. It was studying the Vedas. And so it was like almost like a PhD in these ancient, I guess, human interpretations of natural law. That's how I would describe the Vedas. You know, I know you would spend time in Israel and study Kabbalah. And, you know, there's certainly
so similar.
Like, yeah, like any ancient human philosophy, like just like if you go to any indigenous cultures, like there's such a big Venn diagram of the similarities. The similarities are bigger than the differences. And so I just fell so deeply in love with this philosophy of, oh, if you understand the laws of nature, you can help use them. Like you can use them to help you get to where you want to go, versus being rigidly attached to how we think life should show up and have nature bash us against the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
So to be honest, I went to India the first time just like because I loved meditation. It changed my life. It cured my insomnia. I stopped going gray. I didn't get sick for 8.5 years after learning. And so just to give you the like quick Cliff's Notes is that even though I was on Broadway, my last Broadway show was A Chorus Line. I was understudying 3 of the lead roles, which means you show up to the theater, you have no idea which character you're going to play. I was having extreme anxiety, nervousness,
obviously
going gray.
I would say.
And then this woman sitting next to me in the dressing room, she was like, she understudied 5 of the leads and she was crushing it. And I was like, what do you know that I don't know? And she said, I meditate. And I cue the biggest eye roll of all time. And I was like, yeah, okay, not for me. I just kept getting sick. I kept having insomnia. I kept going gray. I kept sucking at my job. And then finally, I thought I have to try something. So I went along to this meditation course. And on the first day of my first class, I was in a different state of consciousness than I had ever been in. And that night I slept through the night for the first time in 18 months. And I have every night since, and that was 16 years ago.
Oh, thanks.
So like it really, like it changed my life so dramatically that I was like, why isn't everyone doing this? So that's why I went to India. That's why I started the training. And then when I started, I thought it would be like a cute side gig. I was like, oh yeah, like I'll teach meditation when I'm in between shows.
Right.
But when I started teaching, it was so intoxicating. It was so like both to be a channel for the divine, but also to have the reciprocal energetic exchange, having been an actress for so long of like auditions and auditions. And it's like being in an abusive relationship a little bit. Like you're giving so much.
Totally.
And giving you so little in return, that to be able to teach and start a company and have this like instant flywheel of reciprocation. Like, oh, you mean I could invest in these people and they would invest back? You mean I could invest in my business and it would give back? And that became very exciting as well. And I remember there was a day my agents called and they were like, Emily, could you bring us some headshots and resumes? And I was like, sure. This is back in the day when they were printed on paper. And I was like, sure. And then 3 months went by. I didn't bring them any headshots or resumes, but I taught 400 people to meditate. I was like, oh, right. I was voting with my time and attention. And that's when I called them and I was like, I love you. This has been an amazing ride, but I'm going all in with Siva.
There's so much to just highlight and underline and unpack. And I think everybody is enjoying it. And what's so beautiful about the law of resonance is that as you're telling us the story, which is sort of like packed, chock filled with the most awesome insights, we're also sort of feeling the energy that you're giving to us that is just moving through you, which is so life-giving and so elevating. And when you said I had the state of consciousness that I hadn't yet had, you like took us all there for a second, right? And I think everybody kind of knows that that's available somewhere. And so we've had different encounters with that. And I find it really fascinating because like you were saying, my hair was going gray and I couldn't sleep. And it's like, if anybody studied Bruce Lipton's like biology of belief, like when I came back from Jerusalem, I was like, oh, Kathy Heller is my avatar. Like that's the part I'm playing depending on what I'm thinking and believing. That's a personality, right? And gosh, I've changed her so many times, but what's the me of me is like the I am part, you know, before the, I say Kathy Heller's like, who am I? The I am-ness of me. And it's in that elevated consciousness. And when you change it, so many things you change, so much around you does change. Your hair color definitely might change. You definitely might sleep through the night because you are no longer held apart from who you are in this little avatar's like, you know, consciousness, which has very little power. And so we have to kind of all find our way back to the real truth of what is, which is what is connecting us to all that is. And that's where we can move. One wave moves, the whole ocean moves, right? Because now you're in flow. Now you're in alignment. And I just love that everything is always really there to support wholeness. And so when you move toward what really felt like your full and total power, the world meets you and goes, yes, 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 yes. Like this is what we need for you to do. And for somebody else, like for Helen Mirren, it might be that like, this is her flow, right? Like,
yeah.
And for somebody else, I mean, this sweet woman who's 65, she's grooming my cats right now. She loves it. Like that's her thing. Like it could be that that's her thing. Who knows? Maybe she's supposed to be in India meditating.
And I would argue that it doesn't matter. Like if you are plugging into source, if you are allowing yourself to be a channel for the divine, then how you are delivering that fulfillment, how you are delivering that consciousness almost becomes irrelevant only to the degree to which you are enjoying yourself.
That's true.
Because the converse is also true. You could be the most like well-intended activist on the planet, but if you yourself are suffering, if you yourself are heartbroken, if you yourself are stressed, then any action that you are taking is actually delivering more stress to that cause instead of delivering more bliss. And so oftentimes I'll invite my students to say like, okay, take all of the 3D out of it and just look at the planet as an energetic soup. Is your suffering helping anyone else's suffering? It's just making more suffering. And that doesn't mean don't take action. It doesn't mean ignore what's happening on the planet. It's like we look at it, we see it, but then we plug back into source. We remind ourselves of that infinite nature, which you're so beautiful at articulating and reminding us all of viscerally in our bodies. We plug into that, we remember that, and we take action from that place of connection, of love, and of what I would say, stay and play, right? So the opposite of fight or flight is stay and play. And I just want to speak to a moment, like the actual physiological changes that happen when you practice this style of meditation.
Please.
Because it's, yes, everything that you're saying about connecting to the divine, that is true. But what's happening on the 3D level,
yeah,
really, I want people to understand it because because the word meditation has been so commandeered and people use it to be like, oh, I'm going to drink a glass of water meditation. I'm going to do a washing dishes meditation. I'm not fighting with my boyfriend meditation. And granted, I'm a little bit of a snob. Okay. But let me define it. What I would define as a meditation is when you're accessing a verifiable fourth state of consciousness, different than waking, sleeping, or dreaming. And what we do at Ziva is that this fourth state of consciousness is giving your body rest that is 5 times deeper than sleep, which is really important because that means for only a 15-minute meditation, you're getting the equivalent of about an hour-long nap, but without a sleep hangover on the other side, because you're not inducing sleep chemistry in your brain, you're inducing bliss chemistry in your brain. Now, when you go out of fight or flight, that adrenaline and cortisol, which are acidic in nature, that leaves the body. That's why the premature aging happens, by the way. That adrenaline and cortisol is the thing that's making us gray and making our skin elasticity and our brain elasticity slow down or decrease. So the good news is that when you start meditating, not only do those acidic chemicals go away, but we start to flood the brain and body with dopamine and serotonin, which are alkaline in nature. So it's like drinking a green juice for your brain. You start to increase brain elasticity, neurogenesis, the brain's ability to generate new neurons. You increase something, the size of something called the corpus callosum, which is the bridge between the right and left hemispheres of the brain. It's the bridge between the masculine and the feminine. It's the bridge between individuality and totality. So it's not about either or. It's not just being in the unmanifest all the time. And it's certainly not about just being in the human vessel all the time. It's about that divine dance, but the simultaneity of both. Also, you start to, like when you get stressed, when you go into that fight or flight, your digestion shuts down and floods with acid. Your skin starts to flood with acid so you don't taste good if a tiger were to bite into you. And so all of that gets reversed when we go into meditation. And it's, so it's not just a mental phenomenon. So people are like, I don't have time to meditate. It's like, okay, do you have time to be stupid, sick, and slow? No, you don't. None of us do. And the thing about meditation is that if you're doing a style that's actually meant for you, and if you get it, you're going to start to see such a huge return on time investment. You're going to start to see such a huge return on energetic investment. Your sleep is going to get better. Your sex is going to get better. Your immune system will be stronger. But more importantly, and Kathy, I think you're such a living example of this, like your inspiration and your intuition gets stronger. We're like this thing, this person, this hire, this thing, because you really trust that cosmic intelligence that is flowing through you.
I mean, all of that is the thing that we need to have on repeat every single day. What you just said, you don't have time to do this, but do you have time to be stupid, sick, and slow? And the answer is you don't. Like, why would you turn off all the downloads in your brain? Why would you want to create more cortisol? Why would you want to create more inflammation in your body? Why would you want to be more sick? You don't, right? Okay, great.
Like, so what do we do about it? It goes back to what you were saying in the beginning of like, what's our threshold? Like the lesson we have to keep learning again and again, what is your threshold for feeling good? And how do we secretly self-sabotage ourselves because the fight or flight feels familiar because of the trauma we grew up in? And so it's obvious, like, oh, you mean there's a thing I could do for 15 minutes that would give me hours more time in my day, better sleep, better sex, and all those things that I just mentioned? Of course I'm going to do that. But then to your point of how you open the podcast, it's like, how comfortable do we believe, like how much bliss do we believe we deserve? And how comfortable are we with a regulated nervous system? And for most of us, the answer is not very.
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit more. Last night, I had a real encounter with this because my husband's been doing a lot of open mics the last few weeks. He was asked to perform in Adam Carolla's Valentine's show at the Improv. And that's a big deal for him as a comedian. It's probably like the biggest deal he's had so far. So he's got it so in the pocket. It's a little bit Stephen Wright, but it's really good. And he's in the kitchen last night. He's doing it for me for the 25th time, but it's like a whole different thing that he's doing because he's like really gotten in his body and he's gotten the delivery and it's just so good. So like halfway through, I say to him, oh my God, this is the same, but totally different. It's so good. You're so ready. And then he goes in, he goes, I just felt really lightheaded. I don't feel great. Oh my God. And then I go, what's wrong? He's like, I don't know. You gave me like this huge compliment. And now I'm like totally thrown off and I'm so panicked. Like, what happened? And I said, there's like a threshold of like how good you can receive, how much you can receive. And like, oh no, you just hit it. And he's like, I told you I hate compliments. That's what he says. I told you I hate compliments.
So what did you do? Did you like insult him really quick?
Right. I was like, I go, you're such a schmuck. I'm like, you're such an idiot. I was literally saying that to him and he was like laughing. And I was like, just stop it. And then he was like, no, you can't do that because it totally throws me off. I then have this voice inside of me that goes, maybe I'm not as good as she says. Now there's pressure to be that good. And I go, yeah, it's just actually trying to get you back to a set point of feeling just a little ugh. And it's like, we watch ourselves do this.
Yep.
You know, Gay Hendricks was just here this week for a second time. It's like, this is his whole work, is studying like, yep. I'm feeling so good. Maybe too good.
Maybe I'll have 3 glasses of wine. I'm feeling like a 10 out of 10. I don't deserve to feel that good. Let me have 3 glasses of wine. Let me overschedule myself so that I'm too busy to actually enjoy feeling good. I led a retreat this weekend. I did led a sacred secret retreat, which is like this new body of work that I'm building. It's like exactly what I want to be doing. Like all of my gifts that I've cultivated over my whole lifetime, all funneled into one thing. I got a massage afterwards. I took a bath. I was laying on my biomat. I got off the massage table and I literally said, I feel like I have a new body. My back didn't hurt at all. Like I was like, I am in it. Like I am living my dream. And I fainted right under my hip. My back immediately went back into pain. And I was like, okay, clearly I have an upper limit. Okay, good to know. Now, how can I love this upper limit on how good I'm willing to let myself feel? This is my work.
100%. I mean, I find it so fascinating. Like Esther Hicks is constantly saying to people, like, feel good, right? And I swear, if you really go back and watch any of her stuff, people are basically, if you simplified it, people are basically saying to her, come on, isn't there anything else I can do besides feel good? Because that's the one thing I don't want to do. I don't want to feel good. You've got to give me a different direction. Just tell me to
suffer my way.
Tell me to write a dissertation. Tell me to go cross the earth on my knees for thousands of miles. Don't tell me to feel good. That's the worst. And it's like, you cannot let go of feeling like shit. You're addicted to it. You just can't. And that's literally it. Like I've gone in, you've gone into like the belly of the beast with this. And then you're like, you're sparring with this part of yourself that's like, no. Cause guess what? Cortisol is more addictive than nicotine. And we all literally addicted to feeling like shit. That's not a joke. So tell us a little bit about that. Because people can wax poetic all the way. I just want more peace. No, you don't. You do. But the part of you that you kind of hang out with all day long, it actually doesn't. So how do we create a nervous system, a vessel that's available to actually have the thing you're going after that you won't let yourself have anyway?
Okay. This is my new favorite thing to talk about. And it's the work that I'm doing on myself, right? Because I think we teach the thing that we need to know ourselves. So I just really outed myself of like living the dream 10 out of 10 and fainted.
Same.
And then I had a session with my therapist last night and I'm just doing, I'm just like loving little Emily. I'm just like finding the 5-year-old version of me. Here she is. She's on my desk.
I'm obsessed. Can you even handle her? I mean, you're stunning now. So of course she's the cutest.
And so I have a photo of her on my desk. I have a photo of 5-year-old Emily on my altar. I have a photo of 5-year-old Emily by my son's bed. And so all day, every day, I'm just finding ways to connect with the 5-year-old version of myself so that she feels held, so that she feels safe. Because that, like for most of us, not for everyone, but for most of us as children, there was something going on, right? Like some level of adversity, something that we didn't feel equipped or had a model to handle. And so that little version of us went into hyperdrive, went into vigilance, went into some kind of protection. And usually it's that protection that's keeping us from enjoying life too much. It's that protection that's keeping us from like easing up and savoring it and enjoying it. And look, meditation is going to provide like the fertile ground that will even give you the neuroplasticity or like the fertile soil to be able to let this work take. So it's not that meditation is irrelevant. I would say that you need it in order, like that's the hardware upgrade. That's how you defrag your brain computer so that you can do this operating system work of starting to connect with the little version of you, letting that version of you feel safe and held. For me, it's personally showing up by healing my relationship with the masculine. And that for me is like, how can I hold myself? How can I find those masculine, safe, strong containers, that dependable side of myself? So that my feminine feels more safe to flow, so that my intuition feels safe enough to express. Can I find that safety inside of myself to have the hard conversations so that I don't people please all of the time? So that's just my personal window in. But this is very much linked to the work that I'm doing with Sacred Secret, which involves pleasure. And what I have found, so I've been teaching manifesting, you know, similar to you for years, 6 or 7 years. Manifesting is part of the Ziva technique. So Ziva is mindfulness, meditation and manifesting. And the number one complaint I hear from people around manifestation is that they don't know what they want. They're like, yeah, I'm like, great. I would love to manifest, but I don't know what I want. And I'm like, okay, do you know what you want physically? Like, have you had like a self-pleasure practice, or would you be able to tell a lover what you want, like what your body desires? And most of the time, the answer is no, because there's been so much shame, so much conditioning, so much programming to make us think that that is bad or wrong or a sin or not a priority or any other number of stories around our actual physical pleasure.
Yeah.
And so two things that I found with pleasure is that one, if you can start to connect with what you want physically, it starts to remind you what you want in your life. It's like the same muscle being exercised in different ways. So if you can start to attune to, oh, like that's too much too fast, or actually I'd really love a trap massage, or, okay, could you like put that feather on my face? Or, you know what? I desire space right now. I don't want to be in physical pleasure with myself or anyone else. Like if we can name that and then place the order,
yeah,
it's like we get better at placing the order in the rest of our lives. But here's the other really interesting phenomenon that happens with physical pleasure is that this thing that we're talking about, the upper limit of what we believe that we deserve, that is so old and it's in the body.
Yeah.
So no matter how much therapy, no matter how much meditation, yeah, those mental constructs are only going to take you so far. At some point, we're going to have to dance with our past.
Yeah.
And that's what's coded in our cellular memory in our bodies. And this is where pleasure, I think, is a superpower. Because as you start to flood your brain and body with those pleasure chemicals, like with the actual cocktail that nature installed inside of us, we start to believe that we deserve to feel good. And we start to viscerally alchemize those upper limits. And then it's like your receiving gets bigger. Your ability to receive gets bigger because your body starts to believe that it's deserving of pleasure.
This is essential. You know, it's essential. I feel like we could literally spend 17,000 hours talking about how women have so much unconscious shame that we've disassociated from our bodies. Yeah. And instead of having this space and freedom to be in our natural state, the objectification of women and the shame and the trauma has taken us out of our actual natural, erotic, delightful, playful, just being us state. And there's not enough, like for every book that's been written on it, there needs another 1,000 books. Like it's just beginning to come to light in a really powerful way. And we haven't even scratched the surface of that. I love that you're as lovable and kind and loving and magnetic as you are, and that you're taking people on that path. I'm so proud of you and so grateful that you're doing that. And I love what you're saying about this not just being from the neck up.
Yeah.
I think that is, like you said, the word meditation, people have commandeered that word, and you think it's in the head, and it's not. It's actually out here. It's like if you took a picture of energy, like a beach ball, it's here, right?
It's a royal field. It's all of it.
Right. And so when you look at both like the chakras and the spherot, which is the Kabbalistic system, they're actually completely the same, which of course is always like, where was the Zoom call that they got on and had a conference call that like, no, they just kind of know. So that practice of what you're talking about with flooding your body, also like in Kundalini yoga, like waking up the energy from within your body, inside of yourself. It's unbelievable. Like you are the drug. Like each one of us has inside of us this internal pharmacy that just, God, it knows what to do, but we don't turn it on. So let's talk about a baby step, because I think everybody's mouths are watering. Like, yes, like it's just a hell yes. But if you don't yet have a way in, or if you tried it and hated it, and I don't blame you, there's so many things that call themselves meditation that I just don't find enjoyable or interesting or helpful. So what's a baby step to try to make this part of your life's practice?
Okay, so meditation. So I will say that for anyone who has tried meditation and felt like a failure, I see you. I love you. You are not alone. And so I think that there's been a massive game of telephone and like a big time miscommunication, that the good news is that once we clear it up, it's so easy to solve. It is so easy to solve. So here is why I have found, like I've taught over 50,000, been doing this for 14 years for a very long time. And the number one thing I see, the biggest obstacles that people think that they can't meditate because they can't clear their mind. Like, Emily, my brain is too crazy. I am having too many thoughts. I'm thinking about my ex. I'm thinking about my kids. So it's really time, and I'm having too many thoughts. We'll talk about time in a second. But the thinking piece, this is what I want you to remember. Everybody listen up. The mind thinks involuntarily, just like the heart beats involuntarily. So trying to give your brain a command to shut up is as impactful as trying to give your heart a command to stop beating. It does not work. And yet this is the criteria by which everyone is judging themselves as meditators or not. And this is why everyone thinks it's hard. This is why everyone thinks they're failing, because they sit down and they're like, okay, brain, stop thinking. Yeah. Sure would like a snack. Not really that beach ball of love that Kathy talks about. Oh no, now I'm thinking about beach balls and snacks. I suck at meditation. I quit. And that's the beginning and the end of most people's meditation career. And it breaks my heart, because they potentially robbed themselves of a lifetime of bliss and fulfillment and divine connection and inspiration simply because they were judging themselves based on misinformation. So here's the really good news. You do not have to be able to clear your mind in order to meditate. And at Ziva, what we teach is a practice that is not a monk practice. It's not derivative of monastic practices, which most of the apps and the YouTube videos out there and the guided visualizations are actually, they're like watered down monk practices. Like, look at the people who are doing them. Most of them are monks. Think like a monk. Andy Puddicombe, former monk. And I am not here to badmouth any of them. Like, thank God, thank goodness they exist. They have changed the zeitgeist. They have changed the conditioning and shame, even around meditation. Thrilled that they exist. I would call that mindfulness. Anytime someone is guiding you through something, anytime your left brain is engaged, anytime you are focusing your attention, I would put that in the category of mindfulness. And mindfulness is great at creating a state change, and it's great at dealing with your stress in the now. But if you want to get rid of the stress from your past, if you want to induce that rest that's five times deeper than sleep, if you want to create a trait change and actually start to believe that you deserve more of that bliss, actually start to increase your upper limit set point of how much joy you're willing to receive, we have to get rid of our stress from the past. And that is what Ziva does. So obviously I'm biased, but for people who want to start, one, like I'm happy to give like techniques, and I could certainly give like mindfulness tools or state change tools right now. And I'm happy to teach some breathwork stuff for people who are dealing with stress right now. I'm happy to do that. But really, if you want a daily practice that you love, that you look forward to, that you're going to commit to, one, find a teacher that you respect. Two, find a practice that's designed for you and not a monk, unless you're a monk, right? Like if you're a monk, then great. Go to the cave, find the person, renounce your life. Awesome. All for it. But that's less than 1% of the world's population. The other 99% of us who like having sex and who like having jobs and who want to have kids, we have less time in our day with which to meditate. So we actually need a tool that is going to be more effective, induce that deep rest, and allow us to be more awake in our waking state. So I would say find a teacher, find a style that's meant for you, and you'll know it's for you if you start having more time, if your sleep improves, your sex drive improves, your intuition improves, and you're generally happier. Like you don't need all the gadgets and gizmos and stuff. Like I don't need a thing to wear on my head to tell me that my meditation practice is working.
No, it's so obvious. It's obvious before you enter the room. Like I can feel your energy coming from like before you've entered the space. Shared a workshop that you were doing not that long ago, a month-ish, 2 months ago. So many of my people told me how much they loved it. Is there anything like that available now?
Yeah. So I have a free masterclass. So if you just go to zivameditation.com/podcast, I just put it in the link here. So zivameditation.com/podcast. It's about a little more than an hour, and it's a masterclass that goes pretty deep into the neuroscience of why the style of meditation is so powerful. What makes it different from the free apps out there? What makes it different from the YouTube videos? And there's nothing wrong with that. Like I love a guided journey. Like there is a place for that. What Ziva does is it allows you to plug yourself into the divine every day, twice a day. And it's teaching you mindfulness, meditation, and manifesting. So yeah, that's the free masterclass. Right. ZivaMeditation.com/podcast.
I think that's the best use of time, because I feel like people should gift themselves an hour to just learn from you. You're also such a delightful person. It's free. Go there, grab it. Let's talk a little bit about the people that you've worked with, because 50,000 people, I'm sure you've seen some patterns. What's the biggest block that comes up even once they're in, they're doing the practice? And what's a way for us to get over whatever that resistance is? I'm curious what the resistance is once they're in, and then what are some of the things you help them with understanding how to get over that?
What a great question. So interestingly, the biggest barrier once people are in is the detoxification that happens, like the emotional and physical purge that happens as a byproduct of the practice. And it surprises people, because I think everyone thinks that meditation is going to be like a bubble bath for your brain. And you're like, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to like commune with God and I'm going to see rainbows and unicorns everywhere. And no one really talks about the fact that once your body starts to feel safe, once your body starts to know that it can repeatably and reliably access and create that bliss chemistry, oh, guess what? Now it feels safe enough to purge the decades of trauma and the stress that you've been holding on to for decades. Yeah. And so really, that's the biggest part of my job, is helping people through that purging process and holding a safe space for them to feel not alone, to feel supported. That's what we do in our communities. That's what my team does. But I think because we've been trained since infancy to not feel our feelings, don't cry, have a bottle, don't cry, have an iPad, don't cry, have a toy, have some booze, have some pot, have some pills, but don't feel, right? Like, our medical system is not equipped to deal with our feelings. Certainly patriarchy is not equipped to deal with our feelings. So it gets like shunned and shamed. And so we don't even know how to hold space for ourselves. But how could we hold space for someone else? So really, interestingly, Ziva allows your body to feel safe enough to let go of that lifetime of accumulated stress. And that can be scary for some folks, because it's like, who wants to feel the unexpressed rage? Who wants to feel the unexpressed sadness? But I'll tell you that I've been doing this stuff now for like 20 years, you know, wellness, meditation, Vipassana, darkness retreats, ayahuasca, 5-MeO-DMT, like you name it, I've done it. And I keep coming back to the most powerful thing that we could be doing as humans is feeling our feelings.
Yeah, I love everything you just said. The world doesn't want you to feel it, you know, drink it away, take a pill. The patriarchy certainly doesn't know what to do with the feelings that we have. And so that is, it's an epidemic. I mean, it's just, it's something that we have to fully take note of. And a book that helped me with this was Janine Roth's book, Women, Food, and God. And you don't have to have had eating disorder to love the book, because anything that you've used as your way of not feeling, you could substitute in and you'll get the book. Although I think every woman has had some thing with food, but it's really for everyone to read. And it's all about the resistance to feeling feelings. And when you actually turn towards them, what happens by being a witness to and making a space to be there for what is, there's this deep feeling of being in integrity with self.
Yes.
And that in of itself actually feels, even if the thing you're witnessing is very painful, there's this deep satisfaction of the soul and the essential self, which creates an integrity inside of you that feels better than any good feeling feels. Mm. If you're actually arriving in the, as Cheryl Strayed would say, in the wild of actually being a witness. That's the most wild thing you can ever do, is stop and be there to actually arrive. And it is so powerful.
Yes.
And that is the invitation that you just put there for all of us. And I'm so grateful that you did. And I'm so glad that I asked that question, because I didn't know what you would say, but I'm so grateful that you named it. Like, instead of thinking you're going in to go to this agenda of like Disneyland, the agenda is you fully in healing, right? So whatever is going to be there to be required, good for you to like, at least let us know, like, that's what to anticipate, and it's good.
Yes.
And to build the muscle for that.
Yes. And to have the support. And that's why, and honestly, I think that's why when people say, oh, I meditate, most of the stuff that's become mainstream is like the free apps or the guided visualization, which again, all of those have their place. The state change has its place. But if you think about it, it's almost like a band-aid solution. It's like, oh, I don't like the way I'm feeling. I'm going to alter my state in the right now. It's better than having a shot of tequila. But what Ziva's doing, and like my raison d'etre, is like, can we get to the root cause? Can we actually allow the body to feel safe enough and to get the rest that it needs in order to get rid of the lifetime of accumulated stresses, which interestingly is the thing that's keeping us from our manifestation. That is the thing that's keeping us from fully receiving the desires. And so that's why inside of Sacred Secret, like the new body of work, there's a tool that we use called emotional alchemy. And it's exactly this, because Sacred Secret is basically like advanced manifestation. It's embodied manifestation. And before I'll even touch the pleasure, before we even get into the room of the pleasure, I have to make sure that people have the tools to feel their feelings. Because, and that's so simple, but it's been trained out of us. So what we do with exactly what you just said so beautifully is that if you can sit with yourself and hold witness to yourself, that that is better than any good feeling, even if it's uncomfortable. So what I teach people to do is to find the ecstasy in the expression of the rage, to find this 0.1% of ecstasy in the crying of the sacred sorrow. And then we allow that ecstasy that is found to be alchemical, to find the joy and the bliss in the expression of what has been repressed. And then that whole thing clears the channel so that we can receive those desires, so that we can receive those manifestations.
This is just like, I mean, you and I have both had every conversation with all the right people and read all the books, but I feel like every time I speak to you, there's a way that you kind of curate and pull together things that I'm like, this is even more. And there's like even more here. And it's just like, I learn from you all the time. And you're also, you're such an amazing vessel because you're so, it's so grounded and it's so kind and it's so present. And it's just so lovely that like you make it so easy for all of us to join you. And I so just am grateful that you are this sweet, sweet soul.
Thank you, Kathy. It means a lot coming from you. I respect you so much. And your mirror means a lot to me, especially given our 20 plus year history.
That's so sweet. And I was so intimidated by you when I was a freshman in college. I was like, oh my God, who is this Julia Roberts girl? Like I was okay. Well, there's that level. I want to go like a baby bit in because I know it's something you already mentioned it a bunch and it's what you're really most excited about right now.
Yeah.
I feel like because we've already said we could spend so long and it still wouldn't be long enough on the way we have robbed ourselves of pleasure because of the shame. Before we even talk about the physical experience of it, can we just name what you've learned and what you've really come to understand about how we maybe, let's start with just women, how we as women have really disassociated from receiving pleasure. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that with my therapist in my work right now for a year, she's been like, can you take a bath every day? And could you rose quartz in and flowers and bath salt? And I'm like, oh my God. And now it's like, that's my life. It's just like, where was I that like I got three kids and a big business, but I didn't have 15 minutes. So like, and when she first said it to me, I was like, feels ridiculous. Like this is, and then I would soak. She's like, and I want you to soak and I don't want phones in there. And I would just cry. I would get in there and be like, why am I crying? It's like, oh, because I've abandoned myself my whole life. Like,
yes,
self-abandonment all day long. Like, that's my job, you know, give it all away. So just even that, or like this morning I had like really good probiotic yogurt and blueberries. It's like, where have I been not taking care of myself?
In a trauma response.
Okay. So let's talk about how we can come to understand what's that about and then how we can start walking into receiving on a physical level now.
Yes. First of all, celebrating you for taking that bath. Like, I think I'm just now at almost 45 years old being like understanding the concept of unwinding, even though hilariously, like that's what I teach. But like because I love what I do, I'll spend 10 hours teaching and running the company. And then it's like, no, girl, you just wound yourself up. You loved it. It was great. But now you got to unwind. And so I'm like, and that's every day. It's meditation, breathwork, bath. So, okay. But I'll say that I'll make another embarrassing admission is that it wasn't until I understood that my pleasure could fuel my manifestations that I was willing to prioritize it.
I totally get that. Yeah.
And it's just, I feel embarrassed now that I get like the superpower of pleasure. But it took that for me to make it a priority. And so I think this is why I think that nature is specifically using me in this channel this way, because what I did for meditation, it's hard for people under 40 to realize this. But when I started teaching back in 2009, there was no headspace. There was no calm. I made the world's first online meditation training. It was still weird back then.
Wow.
So like, and my gift, the reason why I think Ziva was so successful is that I was able to be like, hey, this thing, it's going to help you have better sex and make more money. I know it's weird and woo woo and like it's meditation's kind of bizarre, but it's going to make you better at life. And now it feels like nature is being like, hey, you know what you did for meditation? Now it's time to do that for pleasure and sacred sexuality. And I'm doing it through manifestation. This is simply an embodied manifesting tool. But why? Why have we been so divorced from our pleasure? Why are we abandoning ourselves? Why are we allowing ourselves to work 10-hour days and take care of our kids and take care of our partners and take care of our coworkers and then pass out asleep after two glasses of wine without ever even checking in with our hearts, our souls? And I think that patriarchy is an easy answer, and it's hard to even see it because we're swimming in it so much. But this summer, I went on a pilgrimage. I went on a priestess pilgrimage to Greece, and I went to Eleusis, Delphi, and Crete. So Eleusis, interestingly, is 45 minutes outside of Athens. And for 3,000 years, there was something called the Eleusinian Mysteries, which is where these, it was a festival and it would happen once a year. You were only allowed to go once and you weren't allowed to speak about it. And if you spoke about it, it was punishable by death. But the people who went to these mysteries, to this festival, Euripides, Plato, Aristotle, generals, world leaders, presidents, like the people who birthed Western civilization as we know it, are being very, very impacted by what was happening in these ceremonies.
Wow.
And it was being run by women. And now we know we have the technology to look inside of the chalices of what they were serving. And we know that it was like the precursor to LSD called ergot or some sort of a mushroom mixture. So people, they were doing like psychedelic rituals and fertility rituals, basically giving people a direct experience of the divine. And people said that they would go to Eleusis to die before they died. And then if you die before you die, then you never really die. And then people would say, oh, you haven't even really lived if you haven't been to Eleusis. But what did that mean? It meant that you go there to actually face your death, to go into the underworld, to feel your feelings. And why this is relevant is that this was being run primarily by high priestesses and women. And then in Crete, right? Crete was a matriarchal society. Delphi, there was the Oracle of Delphi, which again, for thousands of years, leaders, generals, presidents would go and consult with these women who were communing with the divine. And so this has been happening since the beginning of time. Indigenous cultures, goddess worship, it far predates what we understand to be Judeo-Christianity, certainly Christianity. And what's fascinating to me specifically about Eleusis is that here was this birthplace, this thing, this cultural movement that shaped the psyche of so many people that then birthed Western civilization as we knew it, that went on to birth the thing that then robbed us from our femininity, that robbed us from our pleasure, that told us that psychedelics were bad, that told us that our pleasure was a sin. And so the divine feminine has been very purposefully and sometimes violently removed from our history books. And we cannot be something if we cannot see something. And so Mary Magdalene has been a very big part of my personal transformation in the past 3 years. I'd say I've been on a massive, massive spiritual awakening in the past 3 years, even after 13 years of meditation, when I discovered sacred sexuality, it was just like these physical awakenings and this acceleration of my spiritual path. And Mary Magdalene has been a huge part of that. And Mary Magdalene, as we understand her in the West, was represented in the Bible as a whore. Mary Magdalene was a living disciple of, and even you could go as far to say like an avatar of Isis, the Egyptian goddess of motherhood and fertility and sex magic, which is a manifestation tool. And so she had been studying these ancient practices. She was a tantrika and she had a mastery of life force energy and harnessing life force energy. And there's, you know, many channeled texts and many books about this, but you know, the Magdalene manuscripts are part of the Gnostic Gospels, of the books that were removed from the Bible. And even like the Magdalene manuscripts were like smoothed off of the tablets. And so why I think this is important is that, and this is not about like male or female even, this is about the femininity that is inside of all of us, the feminine that is inside of all genders, which is that ability to receive, which is that ability to channel, which is that ability to flow. And that actually you could argue that it was not just Christ consciousness. It was not just Jesus that had an impact on the planet, that it was this balance of Mary Magdalene and Yeshua, that it was this like masculine and feminine balance that was an external representation of what happens inside of our human brains. So why this comes back to meditation is if you look inside of your brain, there's a thing called the hull of Brahman, Brahman being like everythingness, totality. And inside of that, there is the pituitary gland and the pineal gland. And one looks like a penis and one looks like a womb. And in these heightened states, in certain types of breath work, I teach something in Sacred Secret called the lifegasm breath, where I allow people to pull this energy up into their brains. And people say they feel like they have an orgasm in their brain. And it's because the pituitary gland actually secretes, it's a form of melatonin, which is the precursor to DMT. which is the God particle. So when I say that these tools are turning up the dial on your divinity, I don't mean that as a euphemism. I mean that actually neurochemically, you are secreting more of the God particle into your brain. And that union is happening through the balance of masculine and femininity that we all need inside of ourselves. And because I think there has been this violent removal of the direct access to the divine that I would argue is more feminine than a patriarchy or a lineage, or you have to go through a church or a pope or someone else to get to God, I think that we're seeing the imbalance of that on the planet. And my hypothesis and my desire is that if we can remind people and give people the visceral tools to bring this masculine and feminine back into balance inside of ourselves, the amount of magic that may happen for us individually and collectively is beyond what we can even conceptualize right now, because we only have the ability to be what we can see, and we've never seen it in our lifetimes. And so it's why I'm so passionate about this work, and I keep seeing it again and again. It's just miracle after miracle after miracle when people allow themselves to remember just how powerful and how creative they are.
I mean, it's so fascinating. And whether you're Hindu or you're Jewish or Muslim or Buddhist, I mean, the stories that get told shape our consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. It's like,
yes,
you know, these characters, when it comes to money, for instance, you and I talked about that on your podcast, like these stories, like Ebenezer Scrooge, you know, these stories get put in our brain, like, oh, people with money are bad, right? And same thing with the traditions, and the way that traditions are interpreted can definitely affect a global level of consciousness, depending on what we're seeing and what's being depicted, right? And so it really is fascinating. And, you know, obviously, you know, everybody knows, like, I'm Jewish, so we're like less than 0.0. There's only 15 million Jews in the whole world. But in this tradition that we sort of, we know, you know, we don't actually, like, Judaism is matrilineal. So, like, you're Jewish because your mom is, right? So it comes from the mother. And in the ketubah, which is a marriage document from thousands of years ago, actually, the husband has to promise to satisfy his wife sexually. And it's because this is so sacred to the family thriving, is her authority and autonomy. And so that to me is really interesting because.
And her channel.
Yeah. Right?
Like the womb is the matrix point of the entirety of civilization, right? Like every single one of us were birthed through this matrix portal. And so if that thing is being neglected, if that thing is not being honored, if that is not being worshiped as the temple and the portal to the divine, which it is, then our divinity starts to shrivel, right? Like our connection to ourselves starts to shrivel.
Yeah.
Love, I didn't know that was in the marriage document. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like my grandmother, who was born in 1918, you know, so she'd be over 100 and whatever at this point. Like she loved Cher. Like she loved women that were like in their bodies. Like she was a dancer and she met my grandfather in Harlem. They were both dancers at this club called Roseland, and she loved her hips and she loved her boobs. And she was just so dresses for me and want me to feel connected to my body. Right. And so I think that it is just so fascinating to name what society or culture puts on you. Right. And just to start to become aware, like, what feels really true and what doesn't feel true? Like, where inside of you do you have a knowing that just because someone said it over and over and again, it's not necessarily true? And Dr. Shefali, who you probably know too.
Me too.
She said to me that the biggest curse on the planet is women not being receivers, because then we teach our sons and daughters not to receive and not to treat a woman in that way, or not to treat yourself as a woman in that way, which takes everything out of balance, because only when there is this energy of receptivity and flow and like the wildflowers growing as they grow, it sets the balance in motion. And you're right. Every one of us has both aspects, which we need to know how to flex.
There's two images that I think really help to decouple masculine and feminine from male and female that have been helpful for me. And it's even like looking at a cell, like if you look at the membrane of a cell, that boundary is the masculine. And then the gel inside of the cell, the mitochondria, the energy center, the power G center, that's where the light is stored inside of the cell. That's the feminine. And we all have trillions of cells in our body, irrespective of our gender. And then even if you look at an atom, there's the masculine structure. This is almost like a bunch of Rubik's cubes. But then the feminine is the light that animates that atom. And so even at the atomic level, we need this balance of masculine and feminine. And what you were just saying, like what Dr. Shefali said, if we don't, as women and mothers, certainly allow ourselves to receive, which is a feminine, right? That being penetrated by life force energy, that animation. If we don't allow that, then everything goes out of balance. And because most of us have been raised in such deep patriarchy and in such deep capitalism and consumerism, we've had to highlight the masculine parts of ourselves, achieve, acquire, accomplish, like attack, which is not necessarily bad. It's just when it gets out of balance that we start to see the ramifications on the planet. So I'm not like pro male or pro female. My work is open to all genders. What I'm for is polarity and balance and us finding the healthy sacred masculine inside of ourselves and us finding the healthy sacred feminine inside of ourselves. And, you know, and you were talking about Esther Hicks earlier, but I would say that the simplest manifestation recipe there is feel good, place the order, feel good, place the order, feel good, place the order, feel good. And that's a simple formula, but none of us are doing it because somewhere along the line of 10,000 years of conditioning, we allowed ourselves to believe that our pleasure was a sin. And I think it's time for a reclamation. And I think that the amount of healing and rebalancing and magic that will happen as a result is really exciting and, dare I say, necessary for us to actually solve the challenges that we are facing as a species, because we are not going to do it at the same state of consciousness or the same state of receiving from which we have created it. Thank you, Einstein.
I mean, that is the most important thing. And it's so well said. And I feel like it's so uniquely said. Like, yes, other people have tried and are saying this, but the way you just said that feels like the most powerful way I've ever heard anyone say it. And I love that you are out there and you're saying it and you're leading it and you're exploring it and you're welcoming us all. So tell everybody where they can find you, follow along with your amazing podcast, be a part of this sacred work and all of the rest.
Yeah. So thank you. Kathy's been a guest on my podcast. So the show is called Why Isn't Everyone Doing This? And as you've heard, like when I find something that's good, I'm like, why isn't everyone doing this? So I get to interview amazing people like Kathy and Robert Edward Grant and Zach Bush and Dr. Mark Hyman and amazing people from all walks of life where they get to share the modality that has changed their lives so much. The thing that allowed them to feel free and receptive. The thing that they said, thought, why isn't everyone doing this? So season 2 is coming out really soon, which I'm thrilled about. That's a great place. Also, zivameditation.com has everything that we were talking about. Zivameditation.com/podcast is that free masterclass. And then if people are curious about the embodied manifesting, if they're curious about how they could start to incorporate more pleasure into their world, that's at zivameditation.com/secret. And we do at-home retreats. We do retreats in Costa Rica. So depending on your level of comfort of like, do I want to do this in the room, which I highly, highly recommend, or do I want to do this from the safety of my own home? Like there's really something for everyone. And the thing I want to say is that this practice is not an orgy. It's not even tantra. It's really about you creating a relationship with your own body, your own dream, and starting to remember that you deserve to feel good. It's like we visualize, we alchemize, and we magnetize not only the dreams that we want for ourselves, but the dreams that we want for the planet and the species. I'll give a little pro tip is that even if like self-pleasuring feels weird or like, you know, you're not going to take the fancy bath that Kathy was talking about, like, could you buy the best smelling dish soap? And next time you do the dishes, could you put on your favorite song? And could you just smell the soap and like feel the water on your hands? Or, like, could you just infuse 10% more pleasure into whatever you're doing with your day already? Like, that would be a great baby step.
I love this. And as we're signing off, I just want to say how perfectly divine in the timing that today happened to be Valentine's Day, because we didn't necessarily plan for it to be that. It literally just aligned and you are your Valentine. Like, whether we believe this is like a Hallmark made up holiday, it doesn't matter. It's definitely out there. So we know that it is. And it is perfect timing for you to build this self-love practice because you will only feel the extent of the love you're willing to receive from yourself.
Yes.
And that has to come at some point. No one else is going to force you to do it. You have to do it for yourself.
It feels good to love yourself.
Right?
And then you'll be able to love everyone else so much better because you've filled yourself up. You've loved yourself. You've held yourself and you've plugged into source consciousness through meditation and through pleasure.
You guys, I would suggest that you journal about this conversation that we just had, because I think that I don't want you to forget what you just remembered. I want you to remember it and memorize how this feels and write it down and see if you can hold yourself accountable to go listen to the next little thing, which is make time for Emily's training, zivameditation.com/podcast, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just love you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, everyone, for your amazing attention and joy and love. Kathy, you're a star.
You're a star. Okay. Love you guys. Bye.
Wow. Emily is amazing. Here are the takeaways. Number one, the thing that we're all looking for is right inside of us. Number two, plug back into source and your infinite nature and take action from that place of connection, of love. Stay in play. Number three, the most powerful thing that we could be doing as humans is feeling our feelings. Number four, turn off the dial on your divinity. Number five, the simplest manifestation recipe there is feel good, place the order, place the order, feel good, place the order. Number six, it's time for reclamation. The amount of healing and rebalancing and magic that will happen as a result is really so exciting and necessary for us to actually solve the challenges that we're facing as a species. Number seven, infuse 10% more pleasure into whatever you're doing with your day. You deserve to feel good. Number eight, when you love yourself, you can love everyone so much better because you're filled up. You loved yourself, you've held yourself, and you've plugged into source consciousness. All right, now I want to celebrate the alumni for my podcast program. I want to shout out Corrine Canty and her podcast, Remember to Live, Cecilia Manella, who hosts Mental Makeover Radio, Meredith McLucas and her show Totally Athens, and Tina Brown's True Intention podcast. I'm just so proud of you. All of you, your voice is so needed, and I'm just in awe of your courage to get your message out in the world. We'll have links in the show notes so that you can take a listen to those shows. Thank you so much for listening. It's such an honor to serve you week after week, and I just don't take this assignment lightly. I love being here. I love doing this show. It's just such a pleasure. There's great episodes coming up, so follow along on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you're listening. And if any of this has felt valuable to you, I would so appreciate it if you left us a review and share the show with one person. Email them, post about it in your Instagram story. And last thing, if you want to join me for my podcast workshop on March 20th, you can learn the 5 secrets to a successful podcast. Then go to kathyheller.com/workshop. I love you. I'll leave you with a song of mine. Have a great weekend.
la, 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 la.